and all the rest of them too. Remember, you had Matthew, who was the publican, making a lot of money, doing well. His own people didn't like him too good, but he could survive that. And Jesus called him and said, "Follow me." And they all left their trades and their other pursuits and followed Jesus. How could they do that? Girl, how could they leave what they were doing and follow Jesus? How'd they live? Did they ever go back home at night? What did they do?
They gave up their original trade immediately.
They gave up their original trade immediately, he said.
And to follow the Lord. I can't imagine doing that in my life. I can't imagine that somebody said to me, "I want you to follow me." So I said, "Okay." And I just walked away.
He says he can't imagine somebody saying, "Follow me," and he walked away. No, I can't either. But the thing is, they knew something about Jesus. They right away recognized there was some motivation. Yeah, right. This is right. He did. And of course, they were present. Several of them were. When John the Baptizer says, "Behold, the Lamb of God," right? They were walking together beside the sea. So it is really, really important to see that they left. Now, did they go back home anytime? Like on the weekends? So what did they do? We don't know all the details. Sure they did. Because Jesus didn't imprison them and take them away in an enclave and live like that. But that was a substitute or their career from then on, Gene. They were fishing later afterward. That's exactly right. But their career now was following Jesus and listening to him. So they didn't part and parcel give up everything like that. But they did not follow the kind of lives they had before. So this was really a remarkable thing. And by the way, I don't know if we have this on the list of things about him. But you remember that when Peter and John were arrested after healing the lame man at the temple, as according to Acts chapter 3 and 4, that the authorities, the Sanhedrin, they realized that they were, quote, ignorant men, unquote. And that's kind of, perhaps the translators didn't do a really good job on that term there, but I want to suggest to you that none of these people were ignorant. They were all quite learned, and they knew the scriptures. They already knew the scriptures. So Jesus didn't just go out and get some guy that was going into Walmart one day, you know. Yeah, hey, come here. He deliberately chose people, and he chose Peter, no doubt, for his leadership and the fact that he was a student of the scriptures, as no doubt they all were. Because otherwise, as you mentioned, this is the one we've been waiting on. Now they ask questions later on that causes you to wonder about that sometime. But they already had a great realization of that. So Peter was not ignorant. He was not educated according to the tradition of the time, nor was Jesus. Remember, they had questions about that. How does this man have this learning? And, you know, he wasn't from the school of the rabbis, nor were these men. These were men of average intelligence, maybe above average intelligence, but they were just guys of their day, right? Representative, perhaps. And if you think about it, that's what we are, isn't it? I mean, we're not all doctors and higher class people. As far as the world is concerned with social stratus, we're not. So we're average people, like they were. And some interesting events that we will talk about as we go on. We remember he walked on the water. Nobody else did that. Now, why did nobody else do that? Or nobody else attempt to do that? Does that strike you? And they're all in this boat now, mind you. And here comes Jesus. And they were scared to death. Well, you would be too if you didn't know what was happening, right? And so Peter said, Lord, if it's you, let me come, command that I can come to you. And he said, all right, come on. That's pretty gutsy, isn't it? Now, come on, here's somebody walking on the water, and you say, hey, I want to do that. Maybe that's impulsive, but hey, nobody else said it. And so Jesus said, come on, over the bow of the ship or the side of the ship. He goes in the water. How far did he walk? All the way to Christ, wherever that was. So, now imagine that. Does it remind you of other Bible stories like David going against Goliath? When David came down to see what was going on, and all of these men are standing there, you know, talking about, boy, that giant's big. He's big. He was big, right? And David started asking questions, and his brother said, what is you, little whelp, what are you doing here? Who else could have gone out to face Goliath that day? Who else could have done it? Huh? Could anybody in Saul's army have gone and faced Goliath that day? Could they? Absolutely. Any man who had the courage that day could have gone to face Goliath with the same result. Maybe not with a sling, mind you. He could have done it. So, what kind of lesson is that for you and me? Maybe we don't want to try to walk on the water. I don't recommend that. Not the same circumstances of today. And I don't recommend going out against a giant either. But the point is, in that time, anybody in the army could have done it. Any of the apostles could have gotten in the water and walked to Jesus. And Peter couldn't have gone all the way, and he could have still been walking if he just hadn't gotten distracted, right? But he got distracted. However, the point is that this is an unusual thing about Peter. Remember on one occasion when Jesus was talking about, if you don't eat my flesh and drink my blood, then you, right, he said, do you have any part of me? And boy, there's some people, some of his disciples were offended by that. And they asked him, said, Lord, you know that these people were offended by that saying? So many of them left him and didn't walk any longer with him. And what Jesus asked the apostles at that point? He said, will you also go away? Will you also go away? He said, now that's really interesting to me. It seems that momentarily Jesus had a real downer. He saw these disciples going away because of something he'd said, which was a hard saying, perhaps. They didn't understand it. And then he turned and said, will you also go away? I mean, that sounds like he's pretty disconsolate, doesn't it? And old Peter, what did he say? Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We know that you're the Christ. So Peter said, Lord, to whom shall we go? And that echoes to today. Let's see if I'm smart enough to advance this thing. If I'm not, the man in the belfry up there will do it for me. I've touched two buttons twice, and neither one of them seem to work. Okay, here we go. I got a blank screen. This is interesting. I could do like our professor and have my own deal. But I'm not that smart. Plus, I don't have the la-di-da. Have I got it pointed the wrong way? Give me the slide number two. There you go. Good. We all remember this. At the regions of Caesarea Philippi, Jesus asked his apostles, who do the people out there say that I am? What did they reply? Well, he said, some say you're Elijah, some Jeremiah, some another prophet. Isn't it interesting that when Herod wanted to talk to Jesus, he had questioned whether John the Baptist had risen from the dead, remember? Because he had him put to death. So a lot of people were amazed. Now, let me just pause here because we understand. When Jesus was doing these things, the miracles, when his ministry began, he wasn't over in some little unlit place. He wasn't over in some corner. He would do these things publicly, and he created a lot of attention. And later on it said, the authorities said, well, the whole world is going after him. And that's really right. When you look at the number of people that were present on the occasion when he fed the multitudes, and we don't have the full number. We've gotten the number of the men. So we just add to that the women, and they had children in those days. Women had to take them along, couldn't leave them home with a babysitter. So there were masses of people knowing what Jesus was doing. This was really an outstanding situation. Astounding and outstanding. So when you realize that, then a lot of people didn't understand what was happening. Who is this man? What is happening? How can he do these things? And they were talking about it. Let me tell you, more people are talking about him then than are talking about Muhammad Ali today. I tell you. And so Peter, he just said what was the truth, didn't he? Who do you say, Jesus said, that I am? What do you say? Now, you've been around me a while and you've seen what I'm doing. What's your opinion? Peter didn't stammer or hesitate, did he? What did he say? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And that really puts it in the capsule, doesn't it? And of course, Jesus said, blessed are you, Simon, because flesh and blood has not revealed it to you, but my Father which is heaven. But you know, just a little bit later, Jesus is talking about what's going to happen to him. And he says this early on, but isn't it remarkable that he says it early on and he says it often about what's going to happen to him, and they just can't conceive of it. It just doesn't register. But look, here we are in this building today, and I see this pew and I can see you. I can see this book, but there's a whole world here. A spiritual world I can't see and can't comprehend. Well, in a similar way, these men just couldn't understand how it could be possible that this was a spy. He was going to come and he was going to reign and rule. And that's what the view of the Jews of that day, basically, they should have known better. Obviously, they should have known better, but they didn't. Jesus tried to tell these men as he went along. But even after his resurrection, as recorded in Acts chapter 1, they asked him, Lord, do you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? Now, that's just puzzling in a way. So they didn't understand these things. And so what did Peter do? Man, he couldn't conceive of his friend and his Lord having to suffer. He said, Lord, be it far from you. This will never happen to you. This can't happen. What did Jesus say to him? He'd get behind me, Satan. Wow. Man, that's a pretty strong reprimand, isn't it? Yeah, you're minding the things of men and not the things of God, as we all do. Peter was present at the raising of Jairus' daughter. Mark chapter 5, verse 37. He was present at the transfiguration of Jesus, as recorded in Matthew 17. Who else was there on the Mount of Transfiguration? James and John. In fact, we don't have a single instance of where certain disciples were with Jesus for a particular time unless Peter was there present, right? You ever notice that? He's always there. Every time. When the action is going on, he's there all the time. So he witnessed the transfiguration. Of course, later we'll find out, talk about it now, but he didn't quite understand. He was overwhelmed at that time. And in fact, it looks like he was kind of so beside himself, said, Lord, it's good for us to be here. And why don't we build three tabernacles here? One for Moses, Elijah, and one for you. And the voice said, what? This is my beloved son, whom I well pleased. Hear him. In effect, he's saying, don't worry about the tabernacles for Moses and Elijah. Their time is gone. Hear him. So Peter didn't have it quite all together. You know, on one occasion, it's recorded in Matthew chapter 17, 24, a little later, where the people always trying to entrap Jesus or find something wrong to confuse him of, they came to Peter. Does your master pay taxes? What's insinuated by that? Yeah, that he doesn't. And in fact, if he doesn't, we're going to report you to the Roman authorities, right? I mean, that's what they basically are saying to him. And so what did Peter say? He didn't go and ask Jesus anything right then. He was caught. And he said, well, yeah, right? And then he goes and talks to Jesus, and what did Jesus say to him? What did he say? Yeah, well, he said, the heir shouldn't have to pay taxes. In his essence, that's what he said. Nevertheless, so it won't offend them, you go down to the sea, right? Catch a fish, and when you catch him, what are you going to find? You're going to find a coin, and you go and give it to them for me and you. In effect, Jesus sort of, he accommodated Peter, didn't he? To keep him having any problem. But Peter sort of took it on himself. We know he was reluctant to have his feet washed. That great scene in the upper room when the apostles are together there. And none of us can really, we really still can't believe this. We know it's true, but it's just hard to conceive of it. And if you were there and this was happening and you're thinking, now, wait a minute. Jesus got no business washing my feet. Wouldn't you feel that way? Yeah, you. I would, and you would. Just about everybody would. Think about it. But the rest of them, they were thinking it, no doubt. They didn't understand. But they didn't say anything about Peter. He just couldn't stand it. He said, you'll never wash my feet. Well, if I don't, then you're not part of me. And then he said, well, then not my feet, but my head too. He said, that's not necessary. This was just an example for you. So he was the one that spoke up. And he was the one. Remember when Jesus was talking about his imminent suffering? The rest of them probably didn't understand it. And he said what? All of you are going to leave me. And Peter said, oh, no. That ain't going to happen. I'll die for you, he said. Did anybody else say that? Not that we know of. Some of them might have felt that in their heart. Maybe they didn't understand. But old Peter once said, no, not me. I'm not going to do that. Jesus said, you're going to betray me 3 times. So he kind of said more than he could do. And in Gethsemane, Jesus went with all of them, but then he took, who did he take a little further on? He took Peter, James, and John again, right? Sometimes you wonder, did the other apostles have any feelings and resentment about that? We know one occasion they did about James and John. Remember that, the Boanerges we talked about, when they wanted the two of them. Actually, they sent their mother to do a bad job. And she said, Lord, let one of these sit on your right hand and on the left hand. And the other disciples, when Jesus told them that was not of his to do, and of course they didn't understand again. But the other disciples were resentful of that, weren't they? They didn't like that. So they had a little strife and a little jealousy in the group on more than one occasion. But nevertheless, here he took Peter, James, and John, and then he left them and went a little further. And he's praying, and it's his time of great passion. And he comes back. Well, that's late at night. I don't know what the time it was, but they'd been in the upper room. And the prayer that a lot of people think happened in Gethsemane didn't happen. It happened in the upper room. The apostles were present in the 17th chapter as they're recorded. He did pray to God later that this cup might pass from him, but the bulk of the prayer recorded in John chapter 17, I guess all of it, occurred in the upper room with the apostles present. He came back, and here they've all fallen asleep. Well, they've had a long day. And Jesus said, could you not watch with me for an hour? They couldn't do it. So Peter was just like the rest of them. But then, when they came to arrest Jesus, Peter didn't like that, did he? He had a sword. Now, think about that a minute. One occasion, Jesus said, take a sword. Another, he said, don't take a sword. But I don't know if all of them had a sword or not, but Peter certainly had one. And on this occasion, he was going to use force to keep him from taking Jesus, wasn't he? In fact, he missed. His aim wasn't good, and this guy, Malchus, dodged, and instead of hitting his skull and splitting it, it cut his ear off. Now, here's irony of ironies. Jesus took the ear and put it back on, and those guys still didn't say, wait a minute, fellas, wait a minute. Anybody can do this, let's don't have anything to do with him. Now, as recorded one place, they all fell down momentarily. And you had to believe that that was out of awe. But nevertheless, they were bound in their mission here, and they didn't stop. But now, who else tried to stop these guys? Who else did? Peter's the only one, so far as we know. And I know he denied Jesus three times. I know he fled and followed afar off, as we'll see. But think about it. Under the circumstances, not knowing any more than he knew, I think it's to his great credit that he had the nerve and the fortitude to try to resist. That's not the right way, but from the human standpoint, you got to say, this guy was trying. This was his friend, after all. And you want to believe, had you been there, you couldn't stop this. This was something that was supposed to happen, ordained of God. We all know that. But had you been there, how would you feel if they're arresting your teacher and your friend? Would you not want to fight them? And so Peter was doing that until Jesus said, that's not the way those who live by the sword will die by the sword. So then, I suppose Peter said, well, it's all over. And like the rest of them, he forsook Christ, went away. But one apostle followed Jesus. And Peter also tagged along, it says, afar off. Many a sermon has been preached about following afar off, right? Because you can see that if you don't follow Jesus closely, then you're following afar off, and that is not a good thing. He entered the courtyard. Which of these? Oh, how great that is. I found how to do it. He entered the courtyard with the help of John. And there is a story all in itself about John and his affinity, his relationship with the authorities, with the high priest, because he went in. And I don't know why they didn't recognize him as one of the apostles and give him the same treatment or same scrutiny that they gave Peter, but for some reason it seems they did not. So he went out and had Peter to come in. And so that's the time that, you know, somebody said, well, you talk like a Galilean, so you're one of them. I don't know him. And this happened three times. A little girl said, surely you're one of them. No, and finally he, with an oath, denied Christ. And Jesus was where he could see him, at least. He was close enough to him to see him, and he looked at him. And then Peter realized what had happened. Now, you think, you really imagine that he understood what denying Christ like that meant. In the heat of the moment, it seems that he wasn't thinking about it, he was just wanting to stay and see what was going on. It was not like as if he was up before the tribunal of some kind and people asking, were you with this man? Do you know him? Are you one of his apostles? No, it's a momentary thing. He was off guard, no doubt. I'm making excuses for him, but I am making excuses for him. It's not minimizing the seriousness of what he did, but it's understandable to me under the circumstances. Understandable or not, it was a grave error. And he realized it at that time and went out and wept bitterly. Compare this to the case of Judas. And a lot is said about Judas. Jesus calls him the son of perdition. And some people believe, if those people believe that there is a predestination for individuals, they're naturally going to believe that Judas was singled out and predestinated to betray Jesus. You say, is that right or not? And what about it? Could he have done something afterward or not? Good question. There's no reason to believe that he could not have done something and repented. No reason to believe that. Now, I got to tell you that this would have created a major problem in the apostleship. He might not have continued to be an apostle. I don't know. But I know there's a big contrast between what Judas did and what Peter did. Peter realized what he had done and repented of that. Judas brought the money back and said, I betrayed innocent blood, but that's not real repentance, is it? And he went out, of course, as we know. We talked about Peter running to the tomb. And an angel said he was not the first, by the way, to see Jesus after his resurrection, as you know. Now, he saw Jesus before the other apostles, which is the next point. But who saw Jesus first? What? The women, Mary. Right. And she went and told the apostles. Did they believe it? No. But the angel told her to go tell who? Tell Peter and the apostles. So, for some reason, he was singled out here. After Jesus' crucifixion, the apostles, no doubt, were disconsolate. They did not understand fully. You got to wonder what was going on in their minds. How are they feeling about this? Well, what do? They go fishing. They know that. So Peter's name, not all of them are named, but his circle named, and they went fishing again. Well, while they were fishing, somebody was on the shore. And they weren't having any luck. They weren't like Wayne Hatcher, too. That lake, that protected lake down there, catching all those shell crackers and so on. No luck. They saw this man on the shore, and he said, what did he say to him? What? What did he tell him to do? Yeah, it turned out not having any luck. And he said, cast your net on the other side, didn't he? Man, they got so many fish. They started trying to pull it in, and John said, it's the Lord. John didn't jump in the water and swim, about 100 yards. I don't know how deep that lake was, but Peter was, again, probably older, in good physical condition, but that's a good little swim for a grown man that doesn't do it all the time, isn't it? He jumped in and swam to Jesus. None of the other apostles did that. Isn't that interesting? And then this is the time when they were eating and nobody's saying anything much. just waiting to see what's going to happen. It's suspenseful. And this is when Jesus asked Peter, Simon, you love me? And he said, yes, I love you, Lord. And he asked him again, you love me? He said, Lord, yes, I do. Simon, do you love me? And Peter was troubled because he'd asked him a third time. And he said, feed my sheep, right? And then he told him what was going to happen to what he didn't tell him. But he said, when you were young, you could kind of go and come as you wanted to, right? When you're old, somebody else is going to be doing things for you. You will not be able to do what you want to do. Well, that's true of us all, isn't it? We live long enough, somebody else has to start making decisions for us. Somebody else has to lead us along because we can't go on our own. But he said he was talking about the kind of death he was going to die. And that's what he said here. He was also present at the ascension of Jesus with the others. Okay, so we got through part of this, and we'll take up there next week talking about the Apostle Peter, and then we'll talk about his epistle. Thank you very much for your attention.